Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time pumpkin patch picker.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that admires genius in whatever art form that's put in front of us. But even though each of us has a personal preference that brings us the most joy, we all harbor a special affection for cinema. And of the filmmakers working today, Paul Thomas Anderson stands out. Though he began his career in the previous century, with 1996's Hard Eight being his first feature film, Anderson is in the news today because of One Battle After Another, his 10th full-length film, and his first partnership with the Oscar-winning actor Leonardo DiCaprio. This is the second time that Anderson has adapted, fairly loosely I might add, a Thomas Pynchon novel. Pynchon's 2006 novel, Inherent Vice, became a 2014 Anderson film of the same title. Now we have One Battle After Another, which is based on Pynchon's 1990 novel, Vineland. Leonardo DiCaprio stars as a self-described revolutionary, part of a group that calls itself the French 75, known as Bob, the pseudonym he uses when he goes on the run with the baby daughter Charlene of his partner Perfidia, played by Tiana Taylor. Both Bob and Perfidia had been committed revolutionaries, robbing banks and blowing up power grids, but Bob, embracing parenthood, wants to settle down. Perfidia doesn't and abandons them, then ends up getting captured, but is freed by a sadomasochistic official named aptly Stephen J. Lockjaw, played by Sean Penn. Perfidia flees from witness protection, and Lockjaw, for reasons that only gradually become clear, searches for Charlene, played as a 16-year-old by Chas Infinity. But the girl is snatched to safety by Deandra, played by Regina Hall, another French 75 member. And so goes the action, with Bob, having become drug dependent, trying desperately to access the French 75 network while searching for Charlene, with Lockjaw desperate to join an underground secret society dubbed the Christmas Adventurers Club in close pursuit. Balancing tones between overt action, much of it reflecting life as it's being experienced in today's America, and dark comedy, Anderson shows his immense capabilities with shot making, with pacing, and with weaving multiple plot lines at once. The problem, for me, is the tonal balance, with the moments of dark comedy fitting far too uncomfortably with his story's serious issues. Let me just quickly add that the vast majority of critics are fawning over One Battle After Another, so my qualms about the film put me in a distinct minority.
Dan, thanks for kicking things off, telling us about the plot and the background, and I am probably more in your camp, so we should have a spirited discussion, I'm sure, about this particular film. Because what does Paul Thomas Anderson do best? He creates these ensemble casts that are just mind-blowing. And this is no exception. I mean, you called out some of the most notable figures in this particular film. But I would add, certainly, Benicio del Toro. So when we talk about One Battle After Another, we're going to be talking about some really sterling performances. But I'm sorry, I didn't get it. Was this supposed to be a satire? Was it supposed to be a comedy? If it did, it didn't go far enough. Was it supposed to be a commentary on what's happening today? It takes place in 2009, and it starts out with an attempt to free people from a detention center. Interestingly enough, it's at Otay Mesa outside of San Diego that I've actually visited. Bears no resemblance to what's on the screen. That doesn't matter. this goes in 50 different directions, and I couldn't get a grasp on what it was trying to tell us, show us, or deal with. Performances superior. It's 3 hours long. So it's asking you to make a major investment. And honestly, everyone I know has loved this movie or has liked this movie a lot. And I frankly just don't get it. Probably the funniest thing is Manola Dargis, in her review in the New York Times, says, gee, this film doesn't really call out any particular politicians of today. Every time I heard the name Bob Ferguson, I was like, is that some sort of joke? I mean, he is our governor after all. And it just pulled me out of the movie, you know, completely. So I am definitely more than in the minority. I just don't get it. So I'm hoping Nathan, who's a big P.T. Anderson fan, is going to explain it all to me. So Nathan, please tell me.
How long have we been doing this show together? 15 years coming up on
easily,
that?
Yeah.
Well, 15 going on 50?
Yeah, it's nice to know that you can still absolutely stun me. because this year has been such a miserable year for movies. And, I mean, we've talked about a lot of good ones, but so few great ones, so few even trying to be great. And this movie, one battle after another, felt like an oasis in the desert. I think this is a major work. And it reminded me of why I love movies in the first place. It reminded me of how liberating and challenging and exciting they can be. And I've talked to so many people about this movie in the last week. And every time I talk about it, I just feel like I have like electricity running through me. It's such an exciting movie. And it's an epic, as you mentioned, but it's grappling with all these things. And yet I found it to be really light on its feet. It's got all of these exciting action sequences. It's filled with comedy and coincidence, and it's got all these colorful characters on the fringes. And it also has this genuine and I think deeply personal theme about family and commitment and selflessness at the center of it. And it somehow manages to be sort of hopeful at the end, which I was not expecting from Paul Thomas Anderson. And I don't know, I feel like in the last few months, we've really been at loggerheads about tone. I think the biggest arguments we've had about movies have been about tone. And as for this film's tone, I mean, the state of the world right now is overwhelming, and it's scary, and it's explosive, and it's also absurd. And this movie, I think, gets at all those things. I'm curious to know your comments about the comedy not fitting with the serious stuff. I mean, do you want this movie to be noble or more stone-faced or some kind of didactic text? I mean, I guess I don't understand, like, why shouldn't a movie about serious things also be funny? I mean, Scorsese does it, the Coen brothers do it,
and some of them do it.
It wasn't that funny. That's the
yes,
problem.
Yes, this movie is explosive.
No.
Some of the people that you're talking about do it far better than others. The one film that I was thinking about was Dr. Strangelove,
right.
And how I love that movie and how it is such a dark comedy, and it just cuts right to your stomach every single time. Everything about that movie works. And for me, when I was trying to read other critics and going, why does everybody love this movie so much? And I think that what's going on, and I'm not going to say this to you, Nathan, because I respect your take on pretty much anything, even if we disagree, which happens more often than not. But most of the critics, what they were reviewing was how this movie fits into with what's going on today. And they're talking about, I'm a film critic, so I can't really address the issues that are going on today, but I want to. But Thomas Anderson, he's doing it, so I can really love his movie. And so I don't think they're reviewing the movie so much as they are what's going on today.
Okay, well, even looking past the real world themes, which I don't think you should, but let's do that for the sake of this conversation. This is such a terrific entertainment. It's a terrific genre movie.
I thought it was a mess. No. That's where I do agree with you, because this guy can do no wrong when it comes to making a movie.
It
was almost 3 hours long, but I felt like it was a 90-minute movie.
I looked at my watch for the first time, and it was 2 hours into this 2-hour, 45-minute movie, and I thought, That flew by. And also, what could possibly happen in the last 45 minutes? I mean, the first 45 minutes of One Battle After Another, they unfold like one big long montage, and it feels so alive and exciting. You have that middle segment that moves through this town of Backton Cross, and you're going upstairs and across roofs and through tunnels, and it's intense and it's funny. Mm-hmm. And then that climactic car chase, the camera is so close to the road that I almost felt myself leaning back in my seat because it felt too close. I almost had a physical response to this movie. I could feel my heart rate going up. I could feel myself leaning forward in my chair. I mean, this movie, just, I'll say it again, I think it has an electricity to it, and I do think it has something to say about the state of the world. But beyond everything else, this movie basically shows you that pretty much everyone else is playing with tinker toys, and Paul Thomas Anderson is working with heavy machinery. And this, I think, is a movie with a capital M. This is what movies used to be like, and I'm stunned that this just didn't affect you in any way.
Try to unpack this just a little bit. So we have the whole immigrant theme going on. Okay, let's stop right there.
Yeah, let's continue this in the second half. But before we go, Mary Pat, don't you have something you want to say?
I do have something to say. Although the pledge drive has officially ended, you can still donate to us. Please go to SpokanePublicRadio.org and give us your money.
And thank you. At any rate, that was our sudden discussion of One Battle After Another, the 10th and latest film by Paul Thomas Anderson. We'll continue this in the second half. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Anderson's entire career, an activity that, no surprise, is likely to include each of us picking our favorites of his creations. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed One Battle After Another, the latest film by Paul Thomas Anderson. We're now going to take a closer look at the filmmaker's entire career, which so far is composed of 10 features, a number of music videos, and various television work. But the movies are what will be the focus of our attention. Mary Pat and I first saw Anderson's first feature film, 1996's Hard Eight, shortly after it opened during a visit to San Francisco. I recall thinking it was an interesting effort, bolstered especially by the performances of Philip Baker Hall and Samuel L. Jackson. A year later, though, I was in New York with my college freshman daughter, and both of us were blown away by Anderson's sophomore film, Boogie Nights. From there, with films such as Magnolia, Punch Drunk Love, and There Will Be Blood, and The Master, Anderson emerged as his own brand of modern movie master. But, you know, I'm not so sure that that works for all of us here in this program, two-thirds of us, at least, with his new film, One Battle After Another. Mary Pat, you were arguing about that movie.
I just wanted to unpack it a little bit. So look at the various themes it's got going on. It's got the whole immigration theme. Now, this is taking place in 2009 when, you know, Obama was in the White House. Okay, fine. So it's got that theme going on. It's got the love story or the relationship between Perfidia and Bob, then known as Pat. It has this whole, like, white Christian nationalist theme going on. It has this sort of sex addiction thing happening. It's got this love story or this story of affection between Bob and his daughter. It has these crazy nuns living out in the, which actually was one of my favorite parts, because I couldn't quite figure out what Paul Thomas Anderson was trying to say about the Perfidia character. Was she using Stephen J. Lockjaw for her own purposes? Was this her particular kink? So didn't really understand what was happening there. There were some funny parts, but were they funny? Not that funny to me. But then we have the whole, like, Bob, you know, sinks into this sort of haze of drugs and so forth. So is that when he's decided to check out and only in one battle after another, he's back to the revolution because it involves his daughter, Willa? And then, I don't know, it just didn't go far enough. It didn't hang together. It didn't affect me, honestly, in any way. And this is a 3-hour movie.
Yeah, and I think all of the things that you bring up are part of the reason I love this movie so much, is that it doesn't answer all of those questions. I don't want movies to answer all of the questions it
but
brings
up. So
I want it
obvious.
To leave
all
me
this
with
stuff
things.
Is going on. Like, you know, so what new things are you saying about it? Are you just reflecting back what we read every day? Are you going deeper? Are you criticizing people who were involved or those who are uninvolved? I just didn't understand what he was trying to do. Period.
I thought that I was thinking of it as, and when we talk about his larger career, we could talk about some of the influences that he's had. And Robert Altman is a huge influence
obviously,
on him.
Yes.
I saw this as sort of like a big ensemble patchwork movie in the same vein as something like Nashville or Shortcuts. And so it is chaotic. It is all over the place. And yet I think there is a through line. It's a movie about the things that you have to do in order to be a revolutionary. And also, when does your selflessness become selfishness? And at what point do you have to give up that lifestyle in order to become, say, a parent or a responsible adult? And the character of Bob is, he's still grappling with that. He has a lot of the same questions that you have.
Well, yeah, because he's definitely not a responsible adult at this point.
Right, but I think that he is a loving parent in a lot of ways.
And he is.
He struggles to be, yes.
Yes, and I think that also the performances in this are so rich. There's like
that is always
there's like
a hallmark.
There's like a 10-way tie for best supporting performance in this movie. I will say that Sean Penn is both ludicrous and terrifying.
Right. Oh, I agree.
Terrifying.
I sometimes forget that he's really, really good at his job. And Stephen J. Lockjaw is the kind of creation that you just don't see every day. And so, yeah, this movie is, I just think it's so special and singular. And I can't wait to go back and see it again and dig deeper into it.
And this is going to be ironic because one of the movies that I'm going to claim as among my P.T. Anderson favorites is also a sprawling sort of ensemble mess.
With ridiculousness at its heart, yes.
But it wasn't trying to reflect reality in any way. It wasn't trying to beat me over the head with the whole like Christmas, whatever it was, Leaders Club. I mean, I thought that was like ridiculous.
Well, yes, it's supposed to be ridiculous, but also, look at real people in the real world right now are even more ridiculous than those characters.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So what kind of commentary is this making? It's just reflecting reality, and so how is that interesting, important, or exciting?
Well, and I also don't agree that Magnolia isn't trying to reflect reality, because I do think that that movie is set in the real world, which is why the wild things that happen are even wilder.
Well, in that industry,
yes. Because it did happen,
to quote
the movie, but anyway, maybe we've beaten this one into the
everyone should go see it because obviously Dan and I are the only two people in the world crying in the wilderness about our concerns.
And all I want to say is to quote the line from Magnolia, looking at you, Nathan, what is the Tom Cruise line? I'm judging you.
I'm silently judging you. Well, right back at you, Webster.
So, who wants to begin? Nathan, I wanted you to give us a quick rundown why you think he is such a great filmmaker.
Well, what makes P.T. Anderson special? A lot of the things you just criticize one battle after another for, I think. It's why I love him. I mean, I think his movies sort of refuse to define themselves. They refuse to settle down while they're playing, while you're thinking about them later. And they almost always start one way and become something else. Thinking about a movie like Inherent Vice, which is this kind of slapstick, private eye, neo-noir movie, but it also has this sense of melancholy about this once hopeful, you know, hippie generation that has been led astray. A movie like Phantom Thread, which looks like it's going to be this austere costume drama and then kind of reveals that it has this sadistic black comedy hiding inside it. And then Boogie Nights, which is a movie I would like to talk about because I feel like I've talked about some of his other movies as favorites before. But Boogie Nights begins as this swinging 70s period piece, and then it becomes this nightmare of moral decay and murder and bad decisions. And then at the end, it swings back around, similarly to One Battle After Another, and becomes this film about the importance of family and of finding your place in the world. And it just so happens to exist within the world of 1970s and 80s adult films. And I also just think there are so few filmmakers today that have the command of style that Paul Thomas Anderson does. And he so effortlessly absorbs us in the worlds that he's trying to create, some of them real, some of them less so. And I love his use of music in all of his movies. The soundtracks to something like Boogie Nights or Licorice
Thanks to
Pizza,
Johnny Greenwood.
And the Johnny Greenwood scores. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the best scores of recent years. But yeah, I think we would all agree that he is amongst the most talented people working behind a movie camera right now.
And I totally agree with all that, even if I'm not a big fan of One Battle After Another. I can't believe that we've gone this far in a program talking about Paul Thomas Anderson without mentioning what I consider to be his greatest film, maybe a step ahead of Boogie Nights, which I absolutely admired. There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
I was a fan. I was an English and American literature major at University of California at San Diego, and my specialty was reading those huge novels that became popular after the turn of the past century or the 20th century, up until the 30s, and one of the novels that was mostly largely lost right now is a one that was written by Upton Sinclair in 1926 and 27 called Oil. And it was that Anderson adapted into making There Will Be Blood. And it has the feel of a long, involved, complex, never-ending novel just filled with great performances and an amazingly complicated theme. And it is some of the best camera work that he's ever done. I can still remember a scene in which there's a blazing oil well, and it just blows you away. And I'm sorry, but Daniel Day-Lewis can do no wrong in this film. Paul Dano is quite good also, but from the very moment you see Daniel Day-Lewis till the very end, you cannot take your eyes off him. So There Will Be Blood is one of the great films of the past century.
Well, I chose Magnolia, and as I said, it's ironic because I was criticizing One Battle After Another, and there are some similarities in terms of the way that Magnolia sort of rolls out. Now, what's the difference, or why can I differentiate those two films, even though they're lengthy, both of them? As a matter of fact, at one point, P.T. Anderson said, gee, I love Magnolia. It might be my best film. He said this way back when. But I should have cut 20 minutes out of it. And so I'm not sure he was wrong about that.
What, you mean the frogs coming from the rain of frogs?
Yeah, I mean the Exodus part of it. See, the thing that I liked about Magnolia is it was making a statement about life in Southern California, like the vacuous nature of that and how people are seeking and searching for things. And that is sort of one aspect of, you know, the California experience. Also, I mean, the cast is absolutely incredible. If you look at Tom Cruise, Jason Robards' last performance, Julianne Moore,
Philip Seymour Hoffman,
Philip Baker Hall, John C. Reilly, William H. Macy. Yeah, so that to me, and the absurdity of the frogs falling out of the sky, I still remember some of Tom Cruise's, because he plays the primary protagonist, although he got a Best Supporting Actor award because it is such an ensemble
nomination
performance. Okay.
Yeah.
No, anyway. He won, didn't he?
Nope.
No, he did not win.
He lost to Michael Caine in the Cider House Rules, a movie we still talk about to this day.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So at any rate, to end things up here, let's make it clear we're all P.T. Anderson film fans. There Will Be Blood is my favorite. Magnolia for MP. Boogie Nights.
Well, Magnolia is technically my favorite, but Boogie Nights is a close second.
That's right. And Punch Drunk Love is one that we all like, too. At any rate, that was our rundown of the career of filmmaker Paul Thomas Anderson. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. Earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Anderson's most recent feature film, One Battle After Another. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from none other than P.T. Anderson himself. You can learn more from John Sturgis's audio track on the Bad Day at Black Rock Laserdisc than you can in 20 years of film school. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.